Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This is Michael Kirst. You're listening to Rebel Radio with Gorilla One. Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
What did you say, Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I bring you the rebels who are shaping our culture. I'm your host, Josh Levine. This week, we are back with Eddie Donaldson co-hosting. Eddie's the founder of Gorilla One, my link to everything street art, graffiti, and now fine art, as we're going to talk to one of Eddie's clients today, Michael Kirst, who's an up-and-coming artist that is up-and-coming fast. He and Eddie teamed up recently, and they're doing tons of shows together and commissions and really cool chairs, and we're going to dig into Michael's journey as an artist and how he's brought humility and creativity and work ethic and all of that to this journey. It's good stuff. Let's get into it right now with Michael Kirst. How'd you guys meet?
So I was introduced to Eddie by Beth Bowen, an artist friend of mine.
Love Beth.
And the truth is, I went to Chippendale's show, and he was the feature.
I was the lead.
Lead dancer.
Lead dancer.
Nice. Do they still have Chippendale's?
I'm not really sure.
It seems it's
I don't
time
really
that
know.
That'd be a good question for Michael.
I know they have Thunder Down Under, but
that's all Vegas-bound
stuff.
Yeah, Beth introduced us. He came to the Heaven on PCH.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And he was just installing, helping Beth.
Nice.
And I was like, yo, you got some work, bring it out. And he brought some paintings out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, honestly, if it wasn't for Michael, Heaven on PCH wouldn't have been, we wouldn't even have had it because he did more work than anybody there.
Wow.
And I was very grateful. So we hit it off on that note first. And then I was like, yo, you're kind of a dope artist. Let's talk about some work, you know? And now here we are.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I think I want to talk more about it, but you know, as you find people you connect with in your career, right? Like it's about the art, but then it's also about the people.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of the things I like most is meeting new people at shows or
sure.
You never know who you're going to meet and in what way they will relate to your life and circle of friends in the art world and mm-hmm. and beyond that, really. I mean, I work with Eddie now, but we're pretty good friends now.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, I look at it like you make new friendships and meet new people, and then it's sort of a little bit of a life enrichment, you know, in a way, because
absolutely,
I keep my friend circle pretty tight, you know. I mean, I have people that I consider close friends, mm-hmm. but I don't just let anyone in.
Right.
And so it's nice to meet good people like Eddie, and then. Just various people. I just met some really nice people at the last show that we did together in Hermosa Beach. Love South Bay Styles. So it's just, I enjoy meeting new people like that, you know, in that scene.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, having gone without live events and being together in rooms for a couple years, we can sort of appreciate, you know, the value that adds. And obviously, you know, we're all doing business online. Everything's, you know, you can sell stuff around the world or whatever. And there's advantages to that. But there's also, I think, no replacement for being in the room.
Yeah. Up close and personal.
Yeah. Yeah. And those conversations that never would have happened if you hadn't bumped into someone
at the bar.
Yeah, proximity.
Staring
yeah.
at the same picture or whatever.
I like that FaceTime.
Sure.
People time, you know. It's
absolutely. So how'd you get started? Do you remember starting out your first painting kind of thing?
Yeah, well, so I always joke around and say my mom coined it, I guess, that I was born with a pencil in my hand. So I remember drawing ever since my first memory.
Okay.
And just doodling and whatever. But the weird thing about it is I would stand and draw. I wouldn't sit at a table. Mm. I remember living in this house in Glendale when I was a kid. And there was this long, in the dining room, there was a long kind of just a wooden shelf cabinet thing. And that's where I would stand and do my art. And, and my mom worked for a paper company. So I had no shortage of paper,
nice.
No shortage of pencils. And I would stand there all day and just draw, draw, draw. I mean, I was a pretty normal kid. I went out, rode my bike, did sure. all that kind of stuff too, roller skated and all that. Mm-hmm. Grew up with one sister for many years until my mom got remarried. Then I had two half sisters. But pretty much been drawing and illustrating my whole life.
Nice.
Spent a lot of time in high school where I took art classes and then started illustrating a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Started drawing some weird stuff too, but really started exploring
what's
art.
Weird stuff?
Well, I would hang out with this other artist, goes by the name of Plastic God, and we went to high school together, and after school we would go to his house and sit for hours on end. And back then we were really into markers and pastels and, mm-hmm. and pen and ink stuff, a lot of illustration. And we would create, like we would take a National Geographic that had the Sistine Chapel pullout in it,
mm-hmm.
and we would recreate parts of it, but larger. And then I would turn the people into glass instead of like normal people or chrome.
Sure.
And I was kind of doing a little bit of street art at the time as well.
Street art or graffiti?
Kind of both.
What did you write?
Well, I went by the handle Sound, so I was Sound One, and I was in this group KNL.
Okay.
And I could never figure out what the hell it meant, though. It was supposed to be Kings and Lords.
Okay.
But then it was Knowing No Limits, and then Kids Never Learn. So it went by all these.
Yeah,
different
I think
monikers,
that's pretty common.
Just spent a lot of time doing art, and then never really painted though.
Okay.
Like paint on canvas, you know, dabbled a little here and there, but never really liked it. And I was a little intimidated by it, to be honest. And by the time I was married early. I had my first child at 18, and married. That marriage lasted about 7 years. Had three kids from that marriage. By the time I was remarried, I had kind of picked up art again because I let it go for a long time, just mm-hmm. being thrust into the working world, trying to raise a family.
Sure.
No money.
What would you do for work at that time?
I've done just about everything from driving forklifts. I worked in a wood mill. I ran a printing press for 7 years.
Oh, wow.
You name it, I did it. And then I started getting into more of like sales. I did outside sales for a company and started getting into the sales, putting on a suit and tie every day for work, you know, because I thought that was the answer to, you know, all my problems.
And yeah.
Of course, it wasn't, nor was it what I was meant to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a time and a place. I think when you finally figure out what you're supposed to be doing, right, and it happens at different times for everybody, because my mom would always tell me, I'd have conversations with her, and she was like, why aren't you doing art? You need to be doing art. That's what you're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, I rallied against it, and I was like, no, I got to make money. I got to do this. I got to have my own business. I got to do whatever.
Support a family, all that.
Yeah. And just out of necessity, a lot of that was from. And then
quick sidebar.
Yeah.
What do you think, you know, that time away doing all this shit that wasn't for you, if you look back now, what was the value in that? What'd you learn or take from those experiences?
I mean, there's tremendous value to be gained from all the different experiences I've had. Just one, it made me a much more outgoing person as a people person.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say I was necessarily an introvert, but I think once I went from working in warehouses and to going to sales and then being in front of people all the time and kind of honing that particular skill set And then also working in marketing. I was a marketing coordinator at BCBG Clothing for a while, and dealing with clients and just different people. It kind of opened me up and taught me how to, I think, deal with people a little bit more comfortably.
Nice.
So I think there's value. There's a value in everything that you do along the way, even if it's not technically what you're supposed to be doing, I guess, you know, whatever that means. But yeah, I think there's inherent value in every aspect of your life, you know, and all the experiences that you have. Yeah. Some of which I don't fully know what they were, but I know that probably I learned something from it. So
then how'd you sell your first piece? Tell me about how that happened.
So earlier this year, January, I picked up a paintbrush, got some paints, got some canvas, and I'm like, I'm going all in on this thing. And started painting, and right away people kind of took to it, and they were like, wow. You know, and even to this day, I'll run into friends that I've known for a long time, and they'll be like, I didn't know you did that. Like, you know, it's really good and all this kind of stuff. So, and the very first piece that sold was actually a piece I donated to, they were having a benefit dinner, like a fundraising dinner up in Bel Air for a Ukrainian benefit. And I did a piece, I did a face, it was an abstract, donated that piece to the show, and it actually sold that night.
Cool.
So that was the real, you know, kind of the sort of the launch, I guess, into where I am today and
yeah,
selling paintings and doing that.
Now he's selling like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been fortunate. I mean, people, you know, I think
doing really well.
Yeah. How's that happening? How's the word getting out, or how's
a lot of it is word of mouth, meeting people, we go to shows, and
I put them in two shows so far. Mm-hmm. Heaven on PCH and Love, South Bay Style. We released a print on Sugar Press.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But he also has a really tight, you know, he lives in a small community. And I think there's a lot of heat coming, you know, because he didn't do it. You know,
sure.
It's one of those things like, wow, I didn't know you did that. And he's such a nice guy that I think a lot of people, you know, take to him first. And then the art's great too. Mm-hmm. So it's like some people we know, their art's great, but they're, you know, you don't want to be around them. So I think he's got a great combo.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I think it does, you know, some of the pieces I've sold just to close friends who had no idea.
Right.
And I said, oh, well, you want to come look at what I do? And that's how I sold one right on the spot. One of my friends said, put a red dot on that. That's mine.
Oh, that's cool.
I'll take it, you know, just how much is it? And so it's been a lot of that kind of stuff. And then kind of the word of mouth in the small community, like Eddie said, it's now people are, I just got hired to do, just recently, to do a mural in one of my friend's daughter's bedroom and stuff. So they're kind of catching on now, and then they're spreading the word, and social media has been steadily growing and getting a little recognition there, I guess.
Mm-hmm. He's coming to Louisville, so we're good.
Oh, cool.
We're going nice. Global.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, you said something just, you know, I know some of the artists that you've worked with in the past, or folks we both know that are maybe a little harder to...
A little more difficult.
A little more difficult.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, there's a little bit of mystique to that. Or, you know, some artists or people feel like being... not that they're playing a role, but feeling like they don't necessarily need to be easy to work with. And maybe that's part of their persona or what makes them, you know, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, somebody said it to me. Said it best, you know. Kurt Cobain wouldn't have been Kurt Cobain if he wasn't Kurt Cobain.
Sure.
You know, so you're absolutely right. It's like there's these artists, these creators that they create from a certain place, and that transcends into all the how they do business, and it's where they pull their energy from. And that energy transfers to your work and then transfers to your home. And so when you look at it, there's a little bit of that woe factor, because that's that you actually have that peace on in your house. I don't think you get that with Michael. I think you get a sense of peace when his work.
Sure.
I think it comes off with his personality and the way that he applies his energy to the canvas.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, and it's kind of like each person has their own lane, right? And you might not be Kurt Cobain, but you might be Dave Grohl.
Yeah, that's right.
Who's a professional and shows up on time and is not the dark brooding, mysterious.
Yeah.
So I think it's, to me, it's like each person's got to find their way and just, I mean, that would, be who they are.
For me, what I like, I mean, I know this is about Michael today, but what I like is, I like working with artists who you see who they are in their work.
Okay.
Like Dave Navarro, for instance, you know, he's just this really kind soul, and he makes art, you know, and tries to raise awareness of mental health.
Sure.
Good guy, you know, peaceful dude, easygoing, and you feel that when you look at his work. Like when we dropped off a painting to one of his buyer's house, you know, it looked like it belonged there based on her aesthetic and mm-hmm. his. It was like the merging of these two people's energy perfectly on this wall in her house. And she didn't commission the painting. It was right. a painting that he had already done.
Sure.
So it was almost like he made it for her before he knew her. And then the energies just kind of like connected perfectly in this girl's house. Like she knew right where she wanted it.
Sure.
And it was like he did it for the space.
So run with that for a minute. What do we learn about you from looking at your art?
Well, I think one of the aspects of my art is that it's, when I start a painting, I have an idea in my head about what I want to do, and it starts flowing, and then I don't know, I have the initial idea, mm-hmm. but where the painting goes along the way is always different, and it always winds up different. And I think, one, I love portraiture. I love, I'm looking this way because I'm looking at one of my paintings now and trying to figure that out. But mm-hmm. I think one of the things is you really capture a lot with eyes. I mean, it's what we do. We look at each other and we look at each other in the eye. And
sure,
because you pick up a lot of emotion, and it doesn't have to be crazy facial expressions all the time, but mm-hmm. you pick up sort of a sense of emotion in the painting. And I think there's a small bit of the culmination of my whole life and the experiences I've had that come through in each one of my pieces, because when someone sees that, it's like, to them, what does it say to them? It is a piece of me that mm-hmm. I'm putting out there. But I like hearing from people. Sometimes I'll sit back at a show and listen to people talking about one of my paintings. And it's interesting to see what they see in it. And then I know how I felt when I painted it.
Sure.
But I think it's just, you know, and it doesn't have to be overly complicated with me sometimes. Sometimes it's just I see a cool picture or a photo, and I'm like, oh, I can sense like what I want to do with it. Like, oh, I want to add headphones or goggles and mm-hmm. put stripes on the face and whatever and change it up and make it my own sort of signature in a way, you know. Yeah. I think I have kind of a certain style that I do with each one of my paintings. But it's primarily the essence of like that, the what you're getting through the eyes and the face and
What I think I heard there is that Michael's emotional.
I am an emotional person.
I mean, no, really. I mean, it's out not. Listen, that's okay.
I think you see that in the painting.
Yeah, yeah, that's okay. But I mean, I heard, you know, emotion and energy.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, and I think, you know, he has a contagious, infectious kind of nature. And I think you get that from the painting as well. Like, you know, when I look at that, like, I'm not just looking at her spiky hair and her goggles. I'm looking in her eyes and I'm like wondering what she's thinking. Forget mm-hmm. about what I'm thinking. What is she thinking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's looking at you.
So in that process, do you ever get lost?
Lost? Well, I mean, there are times when I'll get lost several times in a particular painting. And then, but I always find my way back.
What do you do?
For me, it's I think, it's kind of strange. Like, I'll get derailed sometimes, and it could be an outside influence. It could be mm-hmm. Whatever. Or I'll just be painting. Like, for example, last night I was in the studio till like 10:30 working on this new piece. And there was a piece of it that I was working on, and all of a sudden I stood back, and I'm like, yeah, I don't like that at all.
Sure.
And then I was sitting there like, what the hell am I going to do now with that, you know? And then it starts like, you get like the self-doubt kind of creeping in, like, first it starts with that one little piece of the painting, and then it starts to go to the whole thing, and you're like, what the hell is this? What am I doing? And then it starts to go to, depends on the music I'm listening to as well, but then it starts to go like, what am I doing with all my paintings? What the hell am I doing with all this stuff? You know, what does it all mean? Is it crap? Is it, what am I doing? And then I go, wait a minute, there's something that someone told me. Beth Bowen actually told me this a long time ago when I first started. She said, trust the process. Mm-hmm. And so now every single time that I run into a little snag or like a speed bump and when during work and I get lost on something, mm-hmm. I always just come back to that. And you know what? It's totally grounding for me. Yeah. And I go, you know what? It's no big deal. I work in layers anyway. I layer, my paintings are pretty layered up and mm-hmm. I can change. That's the beauty about painting is you can change it. And so it kind of brings me back. But I think it's key that for me, I always replay that in my head is trust the process. Mm. And not only for the painting itself, but just our relationship, the way I'm, you know, my lifestyle, everything.
Sure.
I've kind of applied that to a lot of things now. Absolutely. And it works out. It usually works out pretty well, like a positive.
I mean, I think that's a big lesson. I think in anything you do, certainly a creative endeavor, the middle is always kind of messy,
yeah.
right? Because the pieces, it's meant to be, because the pieces aren't put together yet, right? And so if you look too short-sighted, there's no way out. And you kind of have to get that, you have to broaden out the lens and see that you're in the middle.
Yeah,
you're in step 5 of 10, right? And it's not supposed to feel good or look good until you get to 10.
Yeah.
Trust the journey. You're not going to get there if you stop now, right?
Trust the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not at the end of the book yet, you know.
Sure.
You're still writing.
So do you keep going, or are there paintings that you just throw them out and start over? Like, we're not going to get there with that one.
There's been a couple pieces that I just whitewash them.
Yeah. Gesso them over.
But what's that?
You gesso them over.
Yeah. Yep. I just put gesso and start over completely. Yeah. Some of it is old. A lot of that is also older abstract art that mm-hmm. I look at now and I'm thinking, eesh, you know, what the hell was I thinking with that?
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's a good canvas. Canvas sure. ain't cheap. So.
Yeah, for sure.
So I just gesso the whole thing and start over. And then other times, I've had pieces too where I just go right over another piece.
Uh-huh.
I had a piece, a big piece that got rejected actually from a client. I was doing a big abstract piece. It was bright and real angular and edgy. And then I was like, I love it as a background. Why not just interject one of my pieces on it and put a portrait on it? And that's mm-hmm. what I did. And
mm-hmm.
it turned out to be, in my opinion, pretty kick-ass.
Which one was that?
The Rebel.
Yeah.
The one with the big James Dean
smoking. Oh, yeah, I saw that on your site.
Thank you. Yeah. So that's a piece that like that background and I added to it, you know, but I was like, that would look pretty cool. It would look cool going right through the portrait too. So uh-huh. I just kind of kept that one more outlined and
nice.
Yeah. Sometimes it just works out that way.
So you mentioned how music might affect. So what do you listen to when you're painting and how do you see that influence showing up?
So music is massive with me. So yeah. I listen to music. I listen to music all the time anyway, but especially when I'm in the studio painting. And the types of music I listen to varies pretty wildly, as Eddie can attest to. But I do. Go-tos for me. I like heavy, moody music when I'm painting.
Okay.
I like Nine Inch Nails. I like Pink Floyd.
Okay.
I like Third Eye Blind. I can go into Coldplay, or I can go into some trippy EDM type stuff, like dark mm-hmm. EDM. And that's just, for me, the creative juices are flowing and I'm in the zone. And I really like that kind of stuff. On the mm-hmm. flip side, I put on Tom Petty if I'm feeling like lighthearted and I just want some lighthearted music to work to that's just got a good, you know, beat to it, good jam, and I'm just flowing.
Yeah.
I'll put on that, or even like Steely Dan. I'll go back. I'll put on like Boz Scaggs. I'll, you know, just go back to that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. I really like that kind of stuff too. Styx is big.
You listen to hip hop ever when you paint?
I rarely ever listen to hip hop. Yeah, when I'm painting.
All right, Willis, their interview's over. You know what? So can I challenge you?
Yeah.
You ready to accept a challenge?
I like being challenged.
Why don't you try hip-hop once? Why don't you let me give you a little playlist, and why don't you just see what comes out?
All right. I'm good with playlists.
Not that it'll be better or worse. Who knows? But yeah. I'm just saying, why don't I throw you a little jam? Because everything you mentioned exists in hip-hop, too. You know, there's like the Guru Jazzmatazz shit. Yeah. I get you that Boz Scaggs feel. You know, there's. I'd be curious to see what you come up
yeah,
with.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll get back to you on that one, Joshua.
So do you think you can see those influences in the work when it shows up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it comes across in the mood in the painting, and also some of the colors.
Sure.
And just where I think it has an influence, and you can see it a little bit in the painting. Whether someone else equates, you know, Pink Floyd to my painting or whatever,
sure.
is totally...
I have a question. So do you think it helps the strokes or the angles and the edges? You know, like if you're at 9-inch nails, are you cutting sharper than you are when it's Tom Petty?
I don't necessarily paint angry, but I have gotten more aggressive with a painting.
Okay.
With putting on. I really like one of my little style signatures is I do the general idea, the brush strokes, and then I come back with a lot of palette knife work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've definitely been in places with 9-inch nails or like Korn or something where I'm putting it on a little
cutting
bit more
up, slicing through the canvas.
Edgy. Yeah. Trying not to cut the canvas,
right.
but
sure.
But yeah, it definitely affects a little bit of the way I paint too, in a way, which I think is good. I think that's just part of my creative process. And so, but I like the idea of a new playlist.
Yeah, just do one hip hop painting.
Yeah, because I've been given playlists by my son, who himself is a DJ, and he's like,
nice.
I put together this for him. He's an EDM guy, and he put together this dark EDM playlist, and I played that over and over, you know, on several paintings. And
sure.
So I kind of like that kind of stuff because it opens up new. It opens me up to new possibilities, new music and stuff that I haven't heard.
Do you think back to the emotional, Michael, do you think that your son made the playlists gives you a certain spark?
Yeah, I think in a way it does.
Sure.
You know, because I love things that are tied in personally like that.
Yeah.
You know, family, close friends, that kind of stuff. I'm sure that's definitely an element of it.
Good.
For sure.
You had a quote, something I read online, that said, allow yourself to find creativity in all that you do each and every day. Sounds awesome. Teach us how to do that.
Yeah,
I know. It's like, sounds pretty prophetic, huh? But
yeah, like when is that, when is that difficult? And you know, when are the times that stand out that you have to sort of find the creativity?
So it's difficult when I'm angry. For starters, or frustrated, just
sure.
in a situation.
Yeah.
Not necessarily with art or anything, just in life in general.
Sure.
And we all go through
you
that,
tight,
right? I mean, I'm married with kids and friends, all that stuff. So you go through those moments. It's difficult for me to find creativity in those moments, but I try to, I'm a very visual person, obviously, as an artist, and so for me, I try to find creativity throughout my day when I'm looking at things architecturally, people.
Mm-hmm.
I love people watching. It gives me ideas for paintings. They just jump into my head. It could be a piece of a painting, something that I add into a face or just an abstract or something. So I think there's opportunity to find creativity all the time.
Definitely.
It's just people. I think most people go through their day with blinders on. They're so focused on the task, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's hard sometimes for them to get out of their own way and see the beauty that's all around them, or the ugliness, the tragedy, or the triumphs. 'Cause that stuff surrounds us every single day. might be minor. It might not be like a plane crashing or something, but it might just be, we see someone and they just happen to smile at us or something. And so, you know, most people, they don't think too much on that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I take it all in and, you know, not all the time, full time, but I try to derive some sort of creativity from that and apply it to my work.
Yeah. That's good. I find myself like, you know, like I said, you get stuck in the thing and now, you know, you work from home and you're just like in the room like all the time, right? And sometimes it's great. And then sometimes I'm like, okay, I need to go. I'll go down to the marina, walk around the boats, clear my head.
Yeah.
Or let me get out of here and go sit at a cafe and just watch, like I said, watch people. Just kind of shake it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And sometimes I shake something loose.
Yeah, it's important. I think you can get trapped in a situation, like you say, working from home.
Yeah.
Everybody started working from home, right? And then you start to feel trapped a little bit if you've been stuck in there all
solitude. And,
yeah. Even doing the artwork, I'll be, you know, before I was in my current studio, I was working from home. I kind of took over the whole living room, the whole dining room. I took over all these rooms mm-hmm. for my art. And there's lots of light coming in. But even then, God, after like 4 hours straight, you know, doing this on the canvas, it's like, I need to get out for a little bit. I need to, you know, kind of recharge and refresh. So,
yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Eddie, you have a go-to when you need like a fresh environment or perspective or something?
I meditate.
Okay.
I mean, I don't meditate nearly as much as I should, so I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm the meditation guru. But,
pretend like you are.
But I can, you know, I can change my situation just through meditating. And I mean, it's challenging with the business that I'm in, and Josh, you know this because we work together. It's like, we're always around people. We're always problem solving for other people. Critical thinking is a must,
mm-hmm.
but it's tiring. So for me, I just have kind of learned to just take those couple minutes to breathe it out and find something that's happy. Or even if I, like you use anger, when I'm angry, I work great. What I do, because it just gives me that extra push that I need sometimes.
Right.
You know, I used to say I work best when my back's against the wall, because we're out here producing these events for people, and you know, it just works. You get used to it. So I have to find this time where I'm not back against the wall when it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes I'll try to create my back against the wall so I can get through something.
Mm-hmm.
So I just meditate. You know, and I can be anywhere I want within a couple minutes, whether it's on the beach or it's on a motorcycle ride.
Mm.
Just sitting at my desk.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, it's almost a little bit of the opposite, right? Like I'll find, if I'm stuck, I need other people. Like I'll either call James or I'll grab my wife and like talk it through.
Mm.
Or sometimes I want to like distract myself and go solve somebody else's problems.
Yeah, well,
and then that clears up space for me to think about my own.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not one that, you know, sometimes it's one thing.
No, I mean, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
I can definitely relate to that. So when I look at my 72 piece list of things to do, when I'm get stuck on something, I'm like, well, let me grab this low-hanging fruit real quick and call Shepherd and get a yes on this. Because when he says yes to this, it's going to make these other 8 things I need to do flow better because I'm happy that I was actually able to get something done versus kind of finding myself stuck.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's something I learned from my son. Like, that, you know, when he was little, he'd get stuck in this tantrum and this pattern, and sometimes you just need to interrupt it somehow.
Mm.
You know, hand him some food or throw a ball or something to like stop the path you're on, right? And
create a distraction.
And it took me a while to figure out, like, sometimes I gotta do that for myself too, right? Like, you get in the flow, right?
And, well, you can always call me if you need some distraction, because you don't call me nearly enough. So, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. My phone is open.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
We're talking about, you know, your style, and you've got this definitely, I think, a look emerging, especially with the portraiture.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that. You know, I think there's a lot of advantages to having a distinguishable style. And then I also would assume that, you know, we've seen other artists throughout their careers, right? They get into a style and then move on to, you know, mm-hmm. Picasso's famous for his periods or whatever, right? And so how conscious are you thinking about, you know, being in a phase or what the style is or if it's evolving or not?
Yeah, so in the beginning, it's funny, I have a painting in my bedroom, an oil painting, and I couldn't even tell you who it's from, but the style of that painting, it seems like a lot of little dabs of the mm-hmm. brush. And so when I started, I kind of liked that idea, and I was like, how can I kind of put that into my work? And that's where the palette knives came in and adding just color. And it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be like such a symmetrical dab like this certain painting I have in the room, but it kind of went there. And but I do think about, like, is there an evolution? Like, I'll think about people that have created a name, and obviously when you mention someone's name, you know right away their style of work, and it's happened to have worked out very well for them, you know. And so I think, and then you have people like Picasso, which went all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. Went through different phases anyway, major phases. And sometimes I think about it and I think, well, do I want to switch it up? But then I start thinking, well, I'm still relatively new to the game,
right,
in terms of creating my name and creating my style and all that. So I think for me, it's, I'm having a good time doing what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
Just ride that wave. And I don't think so much in terms of changing my style around, but what I do think about is, like, maybe I want to introduce some series at some point and then work on a series, and whether that's the same style that I'm using now, or it's a little bit different, so be it. But to be quite honest, I don't think I'm even at that stage yet. I just enjoy going in. I could paint all day, every day, year round right now. It's just coming. It's just flowing, all these ideas.
Well, I suggest you do.
Yeah.
That means we have more work to sell.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying. Not always easy with kids and sports and everything, but
of course.
But yeah, I think I'll cross that bridge when I get to it.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Depending on how the artwork is doing and how well it's received, you know.
Yeah.
From once it starts pushing out of my community and getting more national and hopefully international, all that kind of stuff, you know.
So let me ask you this. On that point, do you like painting? Do you like commission work? Like, if somebody, well, maybe this is a bad question. What makes you feel better, painting something that somebody else wants you to paint, or something that just comes to you?
I mean, I always feel better painting something that just comes to me. I think that's like where the key to my creativity lies.
Yeah.
But I've got no problems with commission work. And because even if I'm painting something, for example, there was a very specific picture given to me for an upcoming mural that I got commissioned to do. But the person said, the client said, look, I want to see your style in this picture, though. I mm-hmm. know that you use, you know, these heavy palette strokes and all this kind of stuff. So to me, it's still a little bit of my
regardless
painting in there, regardless, but definitely when I sit down and I think about, well, what do I want to put on the canvas? That's where I'm in my happiest place.
Yeah, free flowing.
Because
I know creative. Some of the artists I work with, you know, shit, Retina specifically, like when he makes his work, he loves to, he channels a message.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he's happiest, is when he's able to channel his own message.
Yeah.
You know, we did a lot of work for other people. You know, like one guy, in Spanish, he proposed to his wife with some thing, and he was hesitant, and then he did it, and it was great, and he loved it afterwards. But it was that initial push that it took to get over the hump. You know, a lot of artists have a hard time with that one.
Yeah.
I think what I like about Michael is that he's so talented, he can kind of do almost anything, you know? I mean, so, and like we have a thing coming up for a retail store. It's all abstract. It's all, mm-hmm. it's not, if you saw it in the store, you wouldn't know it was him. Mm-hmm. But it's still really good work.
Yeah, do you ever do exercises like that? Do you ever like try to get go do something totally different? And
I've done a few. I've done some paintings like that. They're not on my website. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think they're representational of what I want to put out right now, but they're completely different styles.
Yeah.
And I've gotten really good feedback on them. Part of the struggle for me is just that, like, what do I want to put out and get recognized for and start to build my brand on? And so even though, it might be kind of fun to do some different things, I kind of limit myself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what it comes down to is I have a little bit of fear about failure. I mean, I think that's natural, right? Everyone fears failure. But failure brought on by my own trying to do too much at once, all at once. And maybe it could work that way, maybe not. I don't know, but I do. I see people's paintings and completely different styles, and I'll be honest, it kind of inspires me to try something different, especially when it's cool and I really like it.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and give it a shot, and some of the stuff comes out pretty good. It's just, do I want to be, now that I'm getting busier and selling more work, do I want to be putting my resources into that kind of stuff?
Right, of course.
Yeah,
I mean, you got to be careful about how you spend your time.
Right? Yeah, because now the time is starting to get pretty full up.
Sure.
You know, I'm pretty busy every day now.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I also think, I've seen somewhere that, one of the differences between pros and amateurs, and maybe it's a little bit of a sports analogy, right, is that pros practice. Like 90% of the time they practice versus, when I go play tennis, I'm just playing tennis, right?
Right.
And so I think there's something to the workouts that maybe never see the light of day, but they're a way to either brush up on skills or just explore different, like cross training, right?
Yeah. And I think I do some of that with my work, my actual work. So to use your analogy, so I'm on the court playing tennis, but I'm still working on the technique a little bit and maybe trying something new while I'm working on my piece. And I do that quite a bit.
That's cool.
So I won't take a day and say, well, I'm going to do this kind of style today,
right.
And, just to, one, see if I could do it, and two, practice something else. I try to do it in smaller increments, I think, but I definitely do that while I'm working on pieces. And
that's cool.
Because I think it's important too, the practice, to go back to that same analogy, like the professional, the practicing 99% of the time, and then they're in a game situation to perform.
Yeah.
And that's where the practice pays off.
Absolutely.
And I think back to when I was doing, I played volleyball in high school and stuff like that. And it's funny, my 16-year-old plays volleyball as well competitively and club and high school. And he's a kid that he's got to be pushed off the court to put time in to better himself to do it.
Mine too.
Because natural ability will only take you so far.
That's right.
When I was his age, I was up at 4:30 in the morning in the gym.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Like, I just put in that time off the court, And
talk about that. I read an article you guys talking about work ethic. So where does that come from for you? And maybe more importantly, what do you do when it's when you struggle with that? Like, how do you get to work when you don't feel like
I check my ego at the door for starters. Like, so when we first met and I worked on Love Malibu Style on PCH.
We have it on PCH.
That was, I went there not expecting to put up any pieces of art. Mm-hmm. I was there because I was asked to shoot photography at the event.
Oh, cool.
And being a former photographer and still having some gear, I agreed to that because, one, it was a way for me to be involved with the event. And I felt honored to be just a part in any way.
Sure.
And then when I saw that they needed me to roll up the sleeves and go to work and do stuff like that, I have tools, I'm pretty handy, and I'm like, I've got no problem with this kind of stuff. So for me, it's a lot of, I don't know. I think Eddie can agree with me. There's no like prima donna with me. I'm very humbled. I'm very humbled to be where I am. I'm very honored to have art sell. I mm-hmm. still get very excited when someone says, hey, I'd like to buy this piece of art or whatever. It just knocks my socks off every single time.
Totally.
Because I, you know, sometimes I just wake up pinching myself like, how did I get here? You know, cool. And in a relatively short amount of time.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that's how you got here.
Yeah.
That's how you got on this couch was your, you know, I mean, I'm envious, you know, at somebody that can just come into a situation the way that he did and does. Because, you know me, I'm not necessarily like that. You know, I'm not rolling my sleeves up just on a whim, you know.
I've seen you carrying boxes. And,
okay, so I'm getting better at that. But, you know, generally speaking, over the 30 years I've been, you know, he just came and just rolled his sleeves up. And
sure.
Was like, you know, he took all the doors off. I mean, he just did stuff that I wouldn't even dream of doing for myself, much less for someone else. So I was like, okay. And then I saw the art, and that's the same thing with everything we do, you know. He's just open, and that disposition is what carries
nice. A
lot of weight. Yeah.
Yeah. I just charge forward because you never know where it's going to lead.
Yeah.
For that particular show, not only did I take doors off and do photography at the event, but it turned out there was some empty wall space. And Eddie said, well, let's put your pieces there.
Nice. I was
like, let's go.
And he works so fluid, Josh, that he ended up painting a painting of a picture that he took of one of the people that was at the show. Because he just saw the photo and was like, I'm going to paint this painting. And I'm like, why'd you do that? He goes, I just liked the picture and I just painted the painting.
Yeah. And I was do you use a lot of your own photography in your process?
I use some of my son's. Mm-hmm. My 16-year-old is a pretty good photographer with film.
Nice.
I really like his work, actually.
That's cool.
So he wants to be a doctor, but I keep pushing him. I say, you've got the eye. You've got it. You've got talent.
Do both.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said it could be a good side hustle for you, you know.
Sure.
Just enter some stuff in shows or contests, see what happens.
Doctors, every time I need an appointment, they're busy. So I think
that's what they're
doing.
They
got plenty of downtime.
They got a side hustle doing exactly. something else, photography probably.
Well, honestly, on that note, you know, with Artists for Trauma, we just did a show in San Diego, and like five of the surgeons were artists, and they submitted different, you know, one was a photographer, had sculptures, one was a painter, and that was the whole focus of, most of the focus was patients and doctors that make art.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, I dig that kind of stuff.
And it was nice because they were excited, you know, they were humble.
Sure.
Because it's their side thing.
Yeah.
You know, they're like saving people and rebuilding people's faces after, tragic accidents.
Yeah.
But then, you know, really getting that giggle off of a painting, you know, your That's reaction amazing. To a painting.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I like learning that someone does that kind of stuff that you had no clue because of their other professional life or whatever. And it's kind of fun. I mean, art is a great outlet for a lot of people, you know, not just artists.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And especially for victims of trauma, right? I mean, it's a healing process. It's a healing process for someone like me. If I'm in a shitty mood mm-hmm. and I start painting, all of a sudden I'm in a better mood, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, there's a little bit of healing, I think, to art. And it doesn't have to be painting. It could be any kind of art, really. I mean, you could be making pottery or...
Yeah, on both sides of that, though, looking at it and making it.
Sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what Rafa at Indivisible Art says is that... art is the language of the soul. Because when you're making it, your soul's present.
For sure.
I like that.
Yeah.
So what do you got coming up? What are you excited about right now, besides just painting?
So show-wise coming up, I know there's a show coming up with Roth and in December, I believe.
That's the South Bay Collective.
Yeah. In the South Bay Collective that I'm a part of, Indivisible Arts and the Resin Gallery in Hermosa.
Yeah.
But I haven't gotten all the details on that yet. In the short term, there's a lot of potential stuff going on. I know with the Solo Dome chair that there's potential for me painting one of those for clients. And so that would be very exciting for me to do that. So just stuff aside from my everyday painting and producing art.
Let's talk about this chair. So this is
Solo Dome.
Solo Dome, mm-hmm. surround sound, stereo chair, and someone can have you paint whatever they want. Is that?
Yeah,
or you
think
collaborate with them.
Eddie can speak more to that.
Yeah, that's the idea. So basically, we put together about 7-8 artists so far. Risky painted the first one.
Yeah.
And Michael's one of the artists that I chose to participate in the program. So you go to the website, you look at his work, you like it. You can have your kid on there. You can leave it up to him. It's up to you. Mm-hmm. I mean, the process will be he'll meet the owner and the person, and they'll just talk through it and figure out where they go from there.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it's such a unique design and shape.
For sure.
It'd be kind of cool to paint on, honestly. You know, it's
kind of a
cool concept. It's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, that sounds something you'd love to have in your house.
Yeah, for
sounds
sure.
Sounds amazing.
There's also another, now that I think about it, I just got word of they're doing the murals again. Resin, Indivisible Arch in the South Bay just got all the murals approved to take up all the rest of the empty spots for Hermosa.
On Hirondo.
Oh,
really?
So I threw my hat in the ring on that. So
he
I'll
didn't
probably
tell me that.
I just got the
I mean, he didn't
last
tell me.
Night.
That's great.
Oh, yeah.
I've been trying to figure out who that was and how to do it since Jason fell off of the project.
They finally figured it out and it's all going to Resin and the Collective. So
nice.
I threw my hat in the ring right away. So I'll probably be doing a mural down there in Hermosa Beach pretty soon.
You just painted a mural at the Fame.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Nice.
And he painted with all black caps. I'm like, do you want some caps? He's like, no, I'm good. I'll just use these. I'm like,
I went
you know that there's thin
school.
And there's fat. Like, he's filling in and it's taking, like, I'm like, two swipes. And he's like, no, I'm into this. I was like, all right.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
And that was a fun day in the yard. Plastic God came out.
Cool.
It was cool.
Which I think is interesting that you guys have a relationship.
It's
because
so,
he's so not outgoing and you're so outgoing. I can't see you two hanging out as kids.
We were pretty good friends in high school, actually. And I think we had the common denominator was art.
Yeah.
Sure.
And we were in art classes together and we'd hang out. We'd actually skateboard quite a bit together. We were skaters and then taggers and doing all that kind of stuff. And then, but we would sit and just do art for hours. And we, as people go, we're on two different sides of the coin, big
time. Sure.
And I kind of lost contact with them for many, many years after high school and all that, just being busy with my own family and doing stuff. And he went a whole different direction, you know.
Your kids will do that, though.
Oh, yeah.
You're having kids at 18. I'm sure you lost contact with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Changed my whole life up, really.
I bet.
Altered a lot of plans, put a lot of things on hold.
Yeah.
You know, shit. It'll
yeah,
do
I guess.
That. For a great many years, you know. So.
Sure.
But recently we kind of, you know, Plastic God and I kind of reconnected, and I just tell him about events, you know. I told him about PCH and Malibu, and he showed up to that. He's good like that. He kind of likes to support, you know, in a way.
Well, one thing that's coming up he doesn't even know about is he's going to paint the yard.
Oh,
is that? And I think you guys should paint the same day. So you can do your thing the same day he does his thing. Not together, but...
Right.
That's make cool. a day of it.
Yep. I think that'd be a great idea. And I already have another idea for a much larger piece in the yard. So
So how much are you guys thinking about? I mean, it sounds like a lot of the focus is on shows. How much are you thinking about marketing and, you know, what strategy, tactics, what you're doing for marketing together?
I mean, I can tell you that there's so much going on out there. Mm-hmm. What I like about Michael is the hyper focus to his community, and what he does and what he's doing, so that he can enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, if we have a retail opportunity that may open up, which will be in hundreds of stores.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think for someone like Michael, it's the opportunities are the marketing versus search. You know, just throwing stuff out there to see what happens.
Sure.
And I think, you know, we're in a better place than we've ever been for those kind of, for that, because there's just so much opportunity. with the Love brand stuff that we're doing, I'm going to plan on including Michael in all the Love shows. So we got Austin coming. We got Kansas City coming. We got Louisville coming. You know, so he's going to go on the road, if not physically, at least with Prince and potential originals. So there is some stuff in the works. But, you know, being the fact that we're all grown-ups here, you know, just throwing up on social media and seeing what happens is not the game plan for us.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know,
yeah,
not that you're lucky to be to get a piece, but you're lucky to get a piece. You know, it's not for everybody. You know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's a weird time because, you know, I think it's tempting for people to feel like, oh, I got to be on TikTok. I got to be on Instagram. I got to be, you know, dropping a YouTube every week or whatever, right? And the reality is, like, you know, that may be the case if you're a 16-year-old rapper, but not necessarily, you know,
that's right,
to sell,
yeah,
hand-painted chairs,
exactly,
and, you know, collectible artwork, and right, and I think, but you know, I think there's sometimes this sort of, for all of us, there's this pressure that we just have to be everywhere all at once. And I think being able to say no to things is really crucial.
Well, also another good thing, you know, one of the first conversations we had, I was like, you know, I've used Andy Anha as an example. He makes $1 million a year selling $700 paintings.
Who?
Andy Anha.
Okay.
$700 paintings. One of my favorite pieces in the house is his.
But I definitely, you know, I think it's interesting that, you know, like you said, you're part of a community down in South Bay, you know, focusing there doesn't mean that you're not also exploring other things, right? But
no.
But taking that seriously, and, you know, for me, I always think of success as resonating out from a core, right? And the bigger that circle gets, the bigger, you know,
the core
one point
gets,
it spans the whole globe. But
yeah.
But you're better off focused on that core than trying to spread yourself to 20 different things.
Well, we've been together 3 months, and he's got a cover of a mag coming out.
Nice.
This next month, we did a Wear Now magazine. We're here. Oh. We're here with you. So we definitely are. He's definitely, you know, open.
Yeah.
But I think it's just making the right choices and not, you know, it's not a TikTok thing.
Yeah.
If people love some of his work and you utilize that for that, I think, you know, maybe there's something there for that. Mm-hmm. And we should think about that. But I think, you know, we're good.
I think there's a difference between responding to what other people do, right? Yeah, if a bunch of TikTokers started sharing your work and that became a thing,
we'd be stoked.
That's
then,
different.
Then
yeah.
that becomes, then you go, okay, well, now let's put some energy
now let's
there,
think
right?
about that.
Yeah. As opposed to chasing it.
Yeah.
And I think that's my... You know, I always hate to see people chasing stuff because it doesn't work.
Yeah, trying to force it. Yeah.
So I'll tell you something about me and him.
We're lovers.
He already knows. We were lovers. No, I'm just kidding. There's nothing wrong with that if we were. Like, we're not right, saying right. that. I'm just saying we were just being funny.
Just putting that out there.
So we used to work together, and I'd always be in my office critical thinking about biz dev and what all these great plans I'd have.
Yeah.
And I'd walk all the way down to the executive side of the office, right?
It was the next we were all literally, yeah. we were literally next door to each other. He's not
and I'd run in his office with the best idea.
There's no staircase.
I don't know if I should tell him this because then but I'd run
this
down
a long time ago.
I'd walk in his office with the best idea, right? I'd skip the 4 or 5 steps, right? Yeah, I got an idea. Get in his office, I'd run the idea down, and he would just chop that idea up and send me back moping. I thought I had a $1 million idea, and Josh's like, what about this? What about this? What about this? What about that? Sounds like a lot of work, Eddie, for the return. And I was like,
So tell me what you learned from that, and I'm going to tell you what I learned from that.
Well, I learned a couple things. One, think about shit a little more before you run to Josh's office. That was the one thing I definitely learned. So I stopped running. I was almost there every other day, and it became once a week, and some of those things actually stuck, right? But I just learned it's critical thinking. I learned a lot of my critical thinking from being in meetings, watching him work, And looking at how someone else breaks down my idea or what I, you know, my concept, you know, it really helped me kind of start breaking things down differently. You know, because I look at it through, at that time I'm looking at it through my lens, thinking my lens is the best lens. So right, my lens is this big. Yeah. Josh's is like this big. It's a really special talent that he has to be able to look at it from all perspectives at the same time. I can do that, but it takes me a good 30 minutes to get around the table. And Josh could just like go around the table and come back with one general consensus in his own head. Mm. What'd you learn?
So what I've learned since then, I've done a lot of coaching, a lot of work on myself and all that. And what I've learned is that is not to shut people down, is to...
Now you learn.
Yeah.
We probably lost a couple million dollars, man.
Probably. More than that. Right? Is that I worked with a coach one time whose motto was always build people's confidence. Right? And so, and you know, and what I've learned for myself is that the path to great ideas goes through a lot of bad ideas, right? And so I again, it's the same for me, for everybody, right? I need to get the bad ideas out of the way in order to get to the good ones. And without the bad ones, I can't get to the good ones.
Yeah.
For me anyway.
Interesting. Right?
And so, so if we were having those conversations today, I think my process would be a lot more encouraging and a lot more building on top of
together. Even if you were paying my salary?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Because that's what we're paying for, is to get to the good part.
Yeah.
I mean, we did some cool things together, but we also, there's a lot of cool shit that we weren't able to do because we didn't get there.
I wish some of those cool things we did together we wouldn't have done and did some of those other things, because we thought they were the coolest thing in the world.
Exactly.
And we got paid, but, you know.
Exactly. And so who knows what we missed out on.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know some of the things we know today about maybe how to get the best out of ourselves and other people.
Right.
So that's what I've learned. Let me do a little quick lightning round before I let you guys get back to real life. What's your favorite city to travel to?
New Orleans.
Oh, I love it.
That's the best. Yeah. Nashville's a close second.
I've still never been to Nashville.
Louisville's going to be the next time we ask, it'll be Louisville.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. I know you said you're into some EDM, so do you have a favorite DJ?
I really like my son.
Okay. What's his DJ?
He goes by the name Odo Kage.
Okay.
Odo Kage, Sound Shadow in Japanese. Nice. But aside from that, I like Lick.
Okay.
Stuff like that along those lines, I guess.
What about best live show you've ever seen?
Wow. I've seen a lot of good ones, a lot of great ones. Best live show, there's two that come really close. One was Moby. Mm. I thought with the LA Philharmonic, actually.
Oh, cool.
That was a cool, just...
Yeah.
It was just really cool to see them together. The other one was actually Sting with the London Philharmonic. I don't know what it is about that.
Okay.
That sort of, you know,
sure.
Composition. You like that. I really like those shows. That one I saw at Hollywood Bowl. That was an amazing show. It's
nice.
One of my favorite venues anyway, so...
Yeah,
both great concerts. Rolling Stones recently was a great concert too. Good live show. But I think on a to be really involved on a personal level with music that I really love, both those shows, Moby and Sting, were great shows.
Nice.
Really, really great.
Those all sound amazing. What's the last great book you've read or listened to?
Wow. I'm not a big reader.
Okay.
But... Shit.
Next.
Let's see. Well, I can tell you the last book I read. It's kind of weird. I like different stuff, but I think it was there was this Navy SEAL book. Dick Marchenko.
Okay.
Put out this book. I'm sure he took a lot of liberties in it. It was pretty wild, but it's like his firsthand account of his time in the SEALs and coming up with this group that kidnaps diplomats and stuff just to test their security and all that.
Oh, wow.
And that sounds fun.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I've read a couple of Navy SEAL books.
I couldn't put it down.
Good stories.
It was an interesting book.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. I forget the exact name of it.
That's cool. What movie do you think you've seen the most in your life?
Wow. I love watching movies over and over again, but probably the one I've seen the most, it'd have to be Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's a good movie. Who's somebody that you've never met, but you've learned a lot from?
Never met, but learned a lot. Well, I mean, not to be cliche or weird, but Andy Warhol would be one that I've, you know, watching his life story and kind of learning more about the guy, because I never really knew anything about him other than, oh, it's Warhol, it's a Campbell's Soup, right? I mean, you know, totally famous dude, kind of a super eccentric, weird dude. But once I figured out, like, his life story, there was some learning done in there. Both kind of some deep-seated stuff and then just superficial stuff that I just never knew that you learn and you figure out, oh, okay, this is a little bit different part of the process that I can maybe at one point kind of put into my own process. Sure. So
did you watch that new documentary?
Yeah, and I thought it was very interesting.
It was a trip.
So it was, I think there was something to be learned from that a little bit on someone that I've never met.
Yeah, absolutely. That was true. I don't know if you saw it, but they used AI to have him narrate.
Did not see that.
So it was you know, it was not literally his words, but his voice was narrating.
Yeah, I haven't.
The whole thing was a trip.
Yeah, it was a trip for sure.
Last one, if I worked for you, if I was on Team Michael, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
I talk a lot when I'm painting. I talk to myself a lot.
I don't know.
I heard smart people do that. I don't know if it's true or not, but
what do you say?
There's a lot of like, ooh, I'd like that. Or what the fuck was that?
Sure.
It goes on both sides of that coin. Like,
that's funny.
What were you thinking with that?
I got a lightning round question.
Yeah.
Biggie or Tupac?
Tupac.
All right. Okay, interesting.
Nice. You got another one of those?
No.
Okay. I like that one.
Mm-mm. Well, actually, I do. No, I don't.
Man. Thanks for doing it. Super fun.
Absolutely.
Talking with you. We'll be watching your career. And
thank you so much.
Excited to see what you guys come up with next. How should everybody find you online? And
so I'm website, michaelkirst.com, just my name.com. And then Instagram is really the only social I do at this point.
Cool.
MichaelKirst_art is my Instagram. And
You can also find him on sugarpressart.com.
Yep.
And Gorilla One.
He's got
One,
a print available, and all everything that's available for sale is also in the shop in the Gorilla One shop.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Good stuff, man.
Yeah, great.
Can't wait to see.
I appreciate your time.
Right on. Yo, that was Michael Kirst on Rebel Radio with Gorilla One. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Make sure you check out Gorilla One for all the great stuff they're doing in the art world. Check out Michael's work online and go buy a piece. And most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.